haven't spoken. On our way with this report of the South African Human Rights Commission, I would like to welcome the Commissioner. Am I correct? Do I say Commissioner? Fine. And other officials within a delegation, they introduce themselves now to tell me whether they commissioners too or not. Our provincial manager. Now she'll inform us about that one. And I'd like to invite, welcome the departmental officials present here today. And I can see you also thought it is a very important meeting to be present at. Before we start with the introduction, there are certain matters that I have to clear up before we start. When it comes to the South African Human Rights Commission, we are aware as education, basic education, that you are a Chapter 9 institution. And we are aware of the fact that when it comes to Chapter 9 institutions, they are all under the Deputy Speaker within Parliament, because I know they go there to report too. But when it comes to you, I know you report to Justice and Constitutional Development. Am I correct?
Yes.
So when it comes to us, I think it's important that you should be part of our meetings too, to give us a report on the work that you are doing when it comes to the child. Because when it comes to the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, there's a whole section on the child itself and access to education. And I was party, because I spoke about our oversight function when you had the launch, you know, of the children's, the Charter of Children's Basic Education Rights. And the minister was present too. And there I spoke to our oversight function itself when it comes to Parliament. And I think when it comes to the Human Rights Commission, you strengthen that oversight of us by reporting to us, giving us a few reports on what you are picking up as a Human Rights Commission. And I think that will strengthen our oversight as Parliament too. Because I think there were quite a number. One of the NGOs wrote a letter to myself as the chairperson. I spoke to them twice. And there's still a little investigation I'm doing when it comes to a report that basic education has to give to you. But I believe that report was given now. And we will go through it once we receive the reply again from you, because we'll get back to you. Because I do owe that NGO a reply itself. And I think what's going to be important now for each and every one of us to introduce ourselves. We start with the honourable members, and then we'll go to our officials. From there, we'll start with our guest, that will be the Human Rights Commission, and then it will be the department itself, and then we'd like to see who are the other people present in this meeting. Thanks a lot. Everyone do know that I'm Hope Marcus, and I am the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education in the National Assembly. Thank you. Honorable Ponshana, if I said your name.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Good,
Good morning, everybody. My name is Alfred Poltani, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, all. My name is Annette Lovemore, also a member of the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to everybody. My name is Maggie Mashishi, the member of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
My name is Crosby Moni, a member of the committee, Togo.
Morning, everybody. Llewellyn Brown, committee secretary for the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, everyone. I'm Dennis Bandy, content advisor for the Portfolio Committee.
I'm from Select Committee.
Good morning, honourable members. Linda Stofley is my name, a researcher for the Select Committee on Education and Recreation.
Good morning, honourable members and colleagues and friends. My name is Lindi Mamogate. I'm a commissioner with the Human Rights Commission.
Good morning, honourable members and guests. My name is Melanie Lou Dagmore. I'm the provincial manager for the Western Cape for the South African Human Rights Commission.
Good morning. My name is Lindsay Ricker. I'm an international intern for the South African Human Rights Commission.
Good morning. My name is Chandra,
and I'm an international intern for the South African Human Rights Commission. Good morning. My name is Matanzima Mwede, Acting Deputy Director General, Department of Basic Education.
Good morning. Alan Subban, from the Director in the Department of Basic Education.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members and representatives from the Human Rights Commission. My name is Ngabakazi. I'm from the Office on Institutions Supporting Democracy in the Deputy Speaker's Office.
Good morning, my name is Kukulan Sullivan, I'm the Parliamentary Officer for Equal Education.
Good morning, my name is Lisa Andrews.
Are you in the mic? We don't hear your name. That's an argument.
Okay. My name is Lisa Andrews.
Sorry.
My name is Lisa Andrews. I'm from the Equal Education Law Center.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Davis. I'm a journalist for the Daily Maverick.
Good morning, Pam Benny from PMG.
Good morning, Kayla Mohi, the Office of the Director General of Basic Education.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Raja Azakani. I'm from Parliament Communications.
Thanks a lot. I think we heard each and everyone's name, so we know exactly who's in the meeting itself. Llewellyn, before I hand over to the Commissioner, are there any apologies?
Thanks, Chairperson. Yes, we have received apologies from Honourable Kina, Honorable Mushwana, Honorable Dudley, and Honorable Madisha.
Thank you for that. You can just have them noted. I'll hand over to the Commissioner to do the presentation, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. And good morning again. I would like to thank the committee, Portfolio Committee on Basic Education, for the opportunity for us to come and present before you the Charter on Children's Basic Education Rights. And as the Chairperson pointed out in her opening remarks, we do report to Parliament. We are an institution that is accountable to Parliament. And although we currently report to the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Constitutional Development, but the work is such that it cuts across a number of areas, and we should quite correctly report to this committee as well on the work that we are doing. In fact, all the people within the Human Rights Commission in the different areas of work should report to the corresponding committees. This is something that has been raised, and I'm hoping that in future it will be something that is much more regular. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for this. I'm going to take members and everybody present through the presentation on this great. Oh, we shouldn't run outside. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And then thank you very much. Chairperson, the presentation will provide an overview of the background, the purpose and structure of the South African Human Rights Commission Charter on Children's Basic Education Rights. It will also indicate how the charter is intended to be used by the Commission and other stakeholders. There are key elements to the Charter, and I think it's important to point them out. The Charter is, we see it as a statement of the various obligations of the state to ensure the realization of the right to basic education. The Charter also points out the shortcomings and the inequities in the realization of this very important right. So it's an outline of commitments made to address the gaps in achieving quality education. What has happened is that over time, the Department of Basic Education, the various administrations that have come in, have said, we know where we are, and there are gaps that we need to address. And as a result, there are policies that have been developed along the way, and there are also statements of commitment of what needs to be done. So we put all of this together here. It also gives an indication of the key role players in the fulfillment of this right. We are told that there are only three countries in the world that have done this. It's Ireland, UK, and ourselves. And the UN reliably informs us that ours is the most comprehensive. So we're very happy about that. the background to the development of the Charter. The committee is aware of the mandate of the Human Rights Commission, and we normally say it to everybody, but we can't say it to the structure that we report to. So we are here to promote respect for human rights and the culture of human rights. We are here to promote the protection, development, and attainment of human rights, and to monitor and
the access and observance of human rights in the Republic. So, in many ways, this charter is a tool for us to monitor this very important right. And I am not going through a word for word through this, and there'll be an opportunity during the discussion. So what we're actually saying is that we're dealing with this right as provided for in Section 29(1)(a) of our Constitution. And we understand this right to be a socio-economic right that is an unqualified one, not subject to availability of resources and, you know, or progressive realization and things like that. And I'm quite happy to explain what we understand by that. So what we also say is that the monitoring of basic education as a right has been hindered by lack of a common and consolidated national statement of the scope and content of the right. There have been the understandings on what it means to actually realize the right to basic education. When can you say, Myra, I am enjoying my right to basic education? There have been gaps in the understanding of that. So we are saying, if we all read from the same script, we will all as a nation be able to say where we are at in the realization of this right. And this is what we are trying to do here. So the purpose of the charter, first and foremost, is for us to contribute towards the realization of the right to basic education and to provide a common legally grounded planning, monitoring, and advocacy framework for use by the South Africa Human Rights Commission and all relevant stakeholders. We understand that although the South Africa Human Rights Commission has set out saying for us to be able to report and to monitor and report, we need to know what is involved. There are many other people like ourselves who need this kind of information, who need to know what we mean, what is the content of this right, and how what is the obligation on the part of the state to fulfill this right. There are members in the non-governmental sector who are also monitoring the right. There are donors who are contributing towards the achievement of the realization of the right. There are school principals who have children under them who need to know what it is they themselves should be able to live with. And what is expected of them. There are a number of players, so we think it's important that we place before everybody, as the Human Rights Commission, charged with the responsibility to monitor this right and mandated by the Constitution, so that we give some kind of direction in terms of our understanding of what is involved. So providing a statement of these various legal obligations on the state and the services and support that must be provided to ensure that all children, especially South Africa's historically educationally marginalized children, enjoy the right to basic education. And we say that understanding that there are services that go with this the realization of this right, and there is support to the people who are responsible for ensuring the realization of this right, that must be given. So it's important to know who should give that and what kind of support that must be. What is the process in the development of the charter? The charter was developed through research. So where we started off was, as I said earlier, just, you know, looking at what is involved. We put together a reference team to oversee and make inputs into its development. Who was in the reference team? The reference team was made up of different stakeholders. We had people from a representative from the National Department of Basic Education. We had people from the NGO sector. We had people from the
academic institutions. So it was a combination. We also had representatives from the international community in the, represented by the UN. So the document began with the scoping of the legal obligations, as I mentioned earlier, the undertakings made by the state in terms of the legal and developmental instruments. Now, I just mentioned some of them. There are a number of them. We have signed and ratified the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. I apologize because we need to put this in full. But it is the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. And we do find this commitment in CEDAW as well. We do find this commitment now in the Convention on the Promotion of Rights of People with Disabilities, the CRPD. We find it in a number of areas. And in developmental policies, it is there in the MDGs. It is there from a regional perspective, the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child. Again, I should have put that in full. That ACRWC is the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child, which is monitored by the African Commission, at the level of the African Commission. And it strangely falls within under the AU. And the SADC Regional Indicative Strategic Plan also has these commitments to basic education. And of course, the national constitutional obligations, we have the section that I quoted earlier, which is section 29.1A, which specifically addresses some of the issues that we are dealing with here. Once we have decided how we're going to move on this, we then briefed the consultant to compile the text of the document. I must hasten to say that the charter is limited to the right to basic education through schools. We are looking at the Charter of Children's Basic Education Rights. And it's aligned to the Department of Basic Education's mandate. There are so many acronyms here and abbreviations, and please pardon me, but I expect in this house everyone to know what DBE is. So what we decided to do was that we want to align ourselves to the DBE's mandate to secure basic education through grades R to 12. And the inclusion of grade R was wholly welcomed by us when it came. The process, again, the charter recognizes that basic education is wider than pre-primary, primary, and secondary education, as I have already said. And it doesn't encompass the full scope of the right to basic education. Those are the limitations that we are putting up front and saying, even before anybody asks, what about ABET? No, we decided quite consciously that this was not going to be part of this charter. We are very focused on children at this point. So after the research, we then convened a workshop. The Human Rights Commission brought together everybody, and as the chairperson mentioned at the beginning, that she was one of the speakers at this workshop, so was the Minister for Basic Education, and of course various people who are working in this sector of basic education. We made it a point that we had people who were working at the rural level, because we needed to have the dimension, that rural dimension, to understand what their understanding is of this right and the needs for the right to be fulfilled. We also made it a point that we would have people who are dealing specifically with the disabled child, the various forms of disability that affect the school-going child. So, after that consultative workshop, wherein a number of stakeholders contributed,
there was so much information that came out that we decided we would allow time for other people who may not have been able to come to the workshop, but who would like still to contribute to this document. So we allowed a two-month period for people to just make inputs to the document. And people did. There was, I remember that there was something that, a complaint sounds too serious, but the higher education people said, well, we would have loved to have been included because basic education, although we don't deal with basic education, but we are affected by it. And that is something that when we set off, we had not thought about. But that two-month period allowed for that, for people to say, we have something to say about this. So after that, the report was then revised, and some of the recommendations taken into account and incorporated into the document. Document was launched on the 31st of January. That's in the previous slide. Okay, so the theoretical framework. We had to decide on a particular approach that we were going to use, and that was going to guide us. So we decided on, and we are not saying by any means that this is the best approach, but this is the approach that suited us. This is the approach that takes from a rights-based approach, and so it meets us in the manner that we wanted to deal with this. And Tomaszewski is a former special rapporteur on UN special rapporteur on education. So he developed this 4A framework and the Right to Education project, which looks at availability of education, accessibility, acceptability, and adaptability, which I'm quite happy to talk about later on in this presentation. So we draw quite significantly from that, and we were very impressed with this approach because it's an approach that actually has sat down to think about indicators, to be able to monitor this so that we can monitor and report on it, because for us the important thing is to be able to report on progress that is being made in the realization of this right. But I have to add that this is shaped by our national education priorities and the realities of our country. The reasons, some of them I've already mentioned, because it's a legally grounded approach, this one, and the indicators that it has, and the important other consideration is just that this approach takes into account the developmental aspects in the right to basic education, and it emphasizes the best interest of the child, and as I said, that is our focus. That was a conscious focus on our part. So we also looked at it from a position of its responsiveness to the contextual equity imperative driving education reform in South Africa, because we cannot move away from that. That is very important. Issues around access and quality. So the indicators are already mentioned. Very, very important. The layout of the charter, it's laid out in such a manner that when we say available education, then we go on to explain what we understand by that availability. So for instance, we look at education being available to all. So the state, the obligations of the state are also laid out, and I will not
go deeply into this because I'm going to talk about these four components. I'm just dealing with the structure of how the charter is laid out. So when we look at this section on the layout is looking at the indicators. For instance, when we say the national recognition of the rights to basic education, what has the state done to recognize the right to basic education? In our country, for instance, we are aware that there is in our constitution there is the realization and of the importance of the right. It's spelled out there, and it says that the right is immediately available. And moving into the gaps, there are policies that have been put in place, and the right is monitored at the highest level. The right is monitored at the level of the National Assembly through the bodies that are reporting on the right to the National Assembly. And the National Council of Provinces has a special committee that is also looking at basic education. And there is a national department that is tasked with the responsibility to monitor the right. Those are the important things in looking at how seriously the right is taken in the country. We launched the charter, and a lot of people were invited, and including Chapter 9. But it was merely communicating that we have now finished working with the charter. And how can the charter be used by the stakeholders? And Your Honor said that a number of people can use the charter. We see it as a means of educating children and caregivers about children's rights. We think that the caregivers, who include parents, need to know what the rights of their children are. They need to know what they can expect from the system. But we also think that it's a good a tool for planning for schools. Governing bodies, principals and teachers. I mentioned principals earlier, as well as teachers as educators are included in that. But governing bodies, if they are to play an effective governance role, need to know what the rights of the children that they are teaching are. There are many examples that can be given. The governing bodies need to know that in a school that they are responsible for, what infrastructure should be in place and what they need to do if that infrastructure is not in place. It's a monitoring tool as well for Parliament, because when we do reports to Parliament, as we do annually, when we do reports to Parliament and we point out all the areas that are lacking, all the areas that we think need to be paid attention to, there is an expectation on our part for Parliament to be able to look at why we say these areas are critical, why we say something needs to be done about these areas, and if there's something that Parliament can look at and say this country has committed itself to 1, 2, 3, and that 1, 2, 3 is not happening, then Parliament knows where to start, and Parliament knows what to do about what is being reported. And fortunately, as I said earlier, the charter gives you an indication of the role players, who should be doing what, and is probably not doing it at that particular time. It's good for civil society, the non-governmental organizations, the civil society-based organizations, the research institutions, the trade unions as well. It's good for them, because here we are talking about the rights of the child, and I really will not want to take up the members' time, but in the understanding, in the monitoring of the rights of the child and the responsibility of duty bearers, and the duty bearer in this particular instance being the state, is that if the Constitution and all the international instruments that were signed and ratified say the state will do this, the state will ensure the fulfillment of the rights of the child, then it means that the state has to consciously make sure that there are no barriers to the fulfillment of that. So it's important that the state is also able to deal with third parties in this case. Anything and anybody that forms a barrier to the realization of the right, because the state is the duty bearer. Now, there are people who take an interest in the form of development partners that we have, and the donors who have a specific interest in the sector. The charter addresses them. So, I have spoken about the role that Parliament can play here. What has happened since the launch of the Charter? We've commented extensively on the draft minimum norms and standards for public infrastructure, because the Charter actually includes that. It goes beyond what is expected from the minimum norms and standards for public school infrastructure, because it addresses a much wider part of it. But we hope that the Charter will assist the people who are looking at the minimum norms and standards, because we as a country have committed ourselves we've made commitments that actually include those minimum norms and standards for public infrastructure. And we have convened a hearing related to the delivery of primary learning materials to school. And I will be guided by the chair, because I'm quite happy to talk briefly about that hearing if the chair allows me at the end of this. This involved all the nine provinces in the country. We have also participated. We've put together a hearing on water and sanitation, and we had a focus on schools in this water and sanitation hearing that we had, because they are affected. And we have, of course, done a draft. We've commented on the draft United Nations Convention on the Rights, United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. The country report has not yet been sent to the UN, but we've commented extensively on that report, and the Charter has been very useful in giving us a direction in how that report should be. We have, of course, I myself participated in a solidarity visit to schools in the Eastern Cape, which was organized by the non-governmental organization under the Equal Education. And that was an eye-opener for me. I participated in a recent dialogue convened by the commission. Our provincial offices have been holding workshops on the rights to basic education. We intend focusing all our nine provincial offices on the right to basic education, because we happen to think that this is a very important right, and it is a right that is time-bound. It is something that if you don't do now, you miss out, because time passes and the child is no longer a child. So we have also looked at the protocols that we receive in terms of Section 1843 on monitoring of the right to basic education that come from the government departments, the various government departments, and the National Department of Basic Education also participates in this. The Commission is very grateful for the opportunity, as I mentioned earlier, and I would welcome any comments, questions,
and also hope that this document can be taken forward and used to facilitate this very important and fundamental right. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Commissioner. Commissioner, just turn to 15 on your PowerPoint presentation. Page 15. The one where you speak about how, as the Commission made use of the Charter. Just comment more on everything here, because I think what's going to be important here is for us to as parliamentarians to receive these reports. That, you know, we know, you know, how to oversight our own department and perhaps other government departments that we have to call in, you know, to speak to us about what is happening. You can start there from, you said, commenting on. Just how briefly on each thing. Because you didn't, you know, perhaps there was not enough flesh given to certain things. Thank you.
Chairperson, let me just make sure I have the correct slide. Is that the slide which is the one that's on the screen now?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. I am just indicating on this slide what we have done, and we have used the Charter to be able to do this. The Chairperson will remember that there was the publication of the draft minimum norms and standards, and we cover the minimum norms and standards. In fact, we cover not the minimum, but we cover the norms and standards for public school infrastructure in our Charter, where we are dealing with the infrastructure. So when the publication of the norms and standards came out, we were able to use the Charter to look at the gaps, to look at where we thought the published minimum norms and standards fell short. So this is how we used the Charter. And again, as I said earlier, with the Charter, remember that we have committed ourselves as a country and said this is how we would like to see infrastructure for schools. So we take from that. We don't take from what has been published. We take from what this country has committed itself to. So that is how we have approached it. And then when we were looking at the primary learning materials to schools, this is how it actually happened. When there was a big issue around Limpopo, we like everybody else in this country, we were concerned, but we wanted to know whether this was only affecting Limpopo. And our sense was that this may not be a challenge limited to Limpopo, that this may be much more widespread than Limpopo. So what we decided to do was to look at what is happening in the rest of the country. And unfortunately, there were all those issues about not getting information and sometimes our own colleagues at provincial level would not know that when they don't get the information that they are supposed to get, what they need to do and stuff like that. There was the provinces did not respond the same way. There were provinces that were very reluctant to give any kind of information. So we decided that maybe we should change the approach to this and rather have a hearing where everybody is obligated to come and give information on what is happening in their provinces. So we therefore invited all the 9 provinces in order to get a better sense of what is happening in their provinces with regards to learning and teaching materials. And this is what this is referring to. And I must say that, again, the response was not the same in all the provinces, but except for one,
all 8 provinces reported on the situation, came to the hearing, presented on the situation in their countries when it comes to learning and teaching materials. And the other bullet that talks about water and sanitation, that is a really critical issue, and I'm sure the chairperson has also heard about the sanitation situation in the different parts of the country, especially the rural parts. And I myself have been part of delegations that have visited some of the places and have witnessed firsthand the unventilated pit latrines in different parts of the country. And we are also concerned about the situation of girls that had been reported. Very, very concerned about that. So, Chair, we wanted to get information in this hearing from people themselves to complement the information that we already had. And then the other bullet is on the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child report, country report. Periodically, the countries that have signed and ratified this convention have to report to the treaty monitoring body. And our country, as you know, missed out 3 reports. And we paid very special attention to this report. This includes the right to basic education, so it falls squarely within our interest. So we have therefore commented quite extensively on this draft report that is going to go to the UN. But we, as a national institution, the UN a few years ago decided they would actually like national institutions like ourselves to put together reports themselves if they felt that the report that the country is giving may be leaving out a lot of information that is critical in deciding what the actual situation in a country is. So we have commented extensively, and what is going to happen is we are going to see if the state has taken the comments that we have made, and if we feel that there's something very important that has been left out, we will therefore put together our own report on this. And of course, this may even be necessitated by the fact that our country has not reported for such a long time. So, and on the dialogue on the right to education, that is a dialogue that is happening at a provincial level, which is conducted by our provincial offices, and I have with me our provincial manager for the Western Cape. They've also conducted that dialogue, and she may want to share with you what happened here in the Western Cape. Because we think that it's important for us to have national dialogues, but also it's important to have dialogues that are located within the provinces, because we get a lot more information and a lot more people participate in those provincial dialogues. And then, which is the other one, the evaluation of the Department of Basic Education's response. That is, in terms of Section 1843, we are supposed to annually require organs of state to provide us with information on progress made in the realization of economic and social rights, and basic education is one of those. So this bullet refers to that, and what we are just saying is that now that we have the Charter on Children's Basic Education Rights, we have used the Charter to evaluate the information that we have received from the National Department, because before we actually did not have a tool that had indicators against which information we receive can be evaluated. Chairperson, that is the slide.
Thanks a lot for that. I think you gave a lot of clarification on some of the work you're doing, but I think what will be important now is just to open, you know, open this report to questions from our members themselves. Thank you. I'll start with the Honourable Mpanchana, and I'll go to Honourable Fani, then I'll go to Honourable Lovemore, then Honourable Mashishi, in that order. Honourable Mpanchana?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to echo your sentiments about the importance of this presentation as far as our work is concerned, holding the department accountable for what it does and what it doesn't. I think that's very important. That's why, Chairperson, on that score, I would, whilst she has explained each of what the commission has done, but one would love to, I know you have published some of these findings, and I must have missed some of the publications among the many piles of documents we receive. But having said that, is it possible to get the documents containing your proposal on each of these? For instance, what did you say? What were your responses to the department's draft minimum norms and standards for public schools? One would like to hear that, you know, if it's possible. Yes, please, if it's possible. That would be very... Yes, Chair. Otherwise, just one thing, Chairperson. Where the Commission says that theirs is not limited to socioeconomic... what they are saying is something like this, that the right to basic education, as far as the Commission is concerned, is unqualified and not limited to socioeconomic conditions. Whilst the Constitution says this right must be realized progressively, I'm not too sure whether, but there's something like that. How do you reconcile the two? And I just wanted to and the commissioner also said she'll come back to the 4As to explain further when we say education must be acceptable, because the constant refrain outside there, the critics are saying our education system not up to the mark. You are there as a commission. What are you saying? Is that criticism justified or just politicking outside there? When considering your 4As, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Honorable Shuana. Thank you, I know you received my apologies. I'm actually sick. Yeah, and thank you. But I have a few questions to ask. The first one is from page 10 of the I think this one, because they're both seven. From the one that you're working on, this particular one. On page 10, I know that a child, I'm sure we all know that the child only goes to school at a particular age. From that to that age, a child is at home. And I was trying to look through the chart and check where you accommodate the parent. Because I want to believe that the first education is done at home. And I don't know how to put this, but I think the parent needs some sort of attention. Because when a child comes to school with length, like starting from nowhere,
it might be difficult. That was my first question. And that was the first part of the question. Because I see you talk of informal basic education and putting of all these institutions, and I don't see where you talk of the parent system. And I want to argue that education should begin at home. And then the second one is on legislation. I'm continuing to say that you talk of the tools of civil society, your institutions, your maybe the NGOs, I'm not very sure, but I want to check where can we fit in the talent that you can advise us. And on page 14, I realize that the MPs will also be monitored, I guess, if I understand it correctly, which is a good thing. And I'm checking that if MPs can be monitored, MPs can monitor progress. The charter provides indicators against which MPs can monitor progress. And who is monitoring the monitor? Because I think it's important for whoever, even the Human Rights Commission, that's my final, the Human Rights Commission also might be having somebody monitoring the monitor. Because if you are left at the very top and nobody really monitors you, there might be a challenge. I need to check the cycle, how it works.
I just found out the monitor is a local organized council. I think is that correct?
Yes.
So the wider question was okay.
We are accountable to Parliament. Yes. Yes.
Okay. And finally, who oversees the human rights? It is the public protector.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Commissioner. I think we certainly shared in the excitement of many South Africans to have a charter like this. Certainly within the party that I represent, we had looked at the possibility of trying to go to the Concord in some way to get them to declare what was actually meant by the right to basic education. So I think many of us have been asking that question, and we were very excited by the charter. I find myself in a difficult position because I don't believe it answers the question. And I want to explain to you why. And to use that to underpin the questions that I will ask. There are many questions that I have, but I'll just ask a few of them. I have been making a habit of visiting what are clearly successful independent and public schools to try and understand what makes them excellent, to try and understand why the young adults that are emerging from those schools are able to take on the challenges of life. And to me, that is the basis of basic education. It is to produce a young adult who is courageous and capable enough to take on the challenges of life, be they tertiary education, be they entrepreneurship, be they whatever. Now, I don't find and that is what basic education, please understand, this is an opinion, it's not anything else, but it is underpinning my questions. I don't find in your charter any reference to any research that was done asking the question, what is quality education? What truly internationally is accepted as quality education? What it appears, and you used the word yourself, you said we take from what this country has committed itself to. So largely what this charter has done, and I just want you to please explain why this was done. And first of all, whether I'm correct in my perception, and secondly, why this was done. What was done was that you said, okay, the four A's I really like. It's a fabulous structure and it really works. But then you looked at what this country has committed itself to. So you looked at what the Department of Basic Education has committed itself to. And a very good example there is the infrastructure. Now that policy is in fact not a commitment. It's a policy that's used as a guideline. It's not a commitment at all, the infrastructure policy. But okay, and you've put that in there as an indicator of a right being achieved, the right to adequate infrastructure being achieved. Is it? It's a policy that was put together by the Council of Education Ministers and by the heads of education departments. Is it good enough? Is it the best? Did anybody look at that? We've made a, well, in this case, it's a commitment in inverted commas, but did anybody say, is this really what we want? Or did we, it seems that we simply took commitments that had been made and put them in. Okay, so that concerns me. That really concerns me. As I say, that we've just taken obligations that have been made made by the state. Chair, I don't want to carry on for too long, but just as my colleague made reference to the role of parents, what I've picked up, one of the things that I've picked up in the successful independent and public schools is that the focus is on the development of the whole child, of the development of values and principles and understanding themselves and developing their skills and talents, etc. That doesn't appear anywhere here. That prepares a child for adulthood. It doesn't appear in this document, and I don't understand why. I would have thought that would be part of the rights, but I'm very interested in your comments on that. Chair, with respect to let me just give you an example of the kind of things that do concern me. Apart from the fact that you've taken departmental and country commitments and just accepted them as okay, page 32, just as an example, is dealing with available education, and it looks specifically at how much money must be spent on education. And it says that 70% of the per learner cost allocated for grade 1 learners by the DBE is allocated to the grade R learners. Now, so if 70% is allocated, then a right is achieved? I can't see that. Just underneath that, the national education budget is 9% of the national GDP. Now, at the moment, I think it's about 6.5% of the national GDP. So are we saying that once we've achieved 9% of the GDP, or if we haven't achieved 9% of the GDP, then we can't have achieved the right to basic education? That I find very confusing. And, okay, then two short last questions. The structure of your report, the way I read it is, yes, there are state obligations, but then you've got a column labeled indicators stroke rights. So the fact that it has rights in the title of the column means that every child who is privileged to enjoy basic education, and every child, of course, must in this country, has a right to everything in that second column. Has a right to have 9% of the GDP spent on basic education, has a right to a netball field, for instance. So I find that confusing, And then my last question is just on review. You spoke about the review of DBE and what they're doing, and that's wonderful. I'm glad that you're going to exercise that right that you have. But will you be doing a review of the charter on an ongoing basis? And an example is minimum norms and standards for infrastructure. There might be new norms and standards which will override what you currently have in the charter. You will then have to review it. Will you be doing a review on a regular basis of the charter? Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, there's been quite a number of questions. Would you mind if I try to? Yes, I think so. Thank you very much. Honourable Mashishi, and then Honourable Hanyaho, then I'll go to Honourable Madisha, and then Honourable Moni, and then myself.
Sorry, Chairperson, my most sincere apologies. I ask questions without appreciating, and I don't want to start responding without I say I appreciate.
All right.
I just forgot. This is wonderful that you have the chapter. Thank you.
And then I think when it comes to the commissioner, just tell us when it comes to quality education. There was an extensive hearing within Parliament that was led by the previous chairperson on access to quality education. Did you take that into consideration? Because I'm sure many people attended gave hearings, a lot, up to 6,000. And then when it comes to education totality, you know, when it comes to the pedagogical side of education, when you study, we speak to principals. How do you take in the principles of education, you know, within your charter? Because I think those are little things that the Honourable Lovemore speaks to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the questions. They make you think as well. Yeah, thank you very much. To answer Honourable Pachane's question about the documents, yes, definitely. All the documents are available. And I think maybe my colleagues from the Western Cape should just note the documents that you would be interested in so that we can make sure that those are available. And can we work with Llewellyn on this? Definitely. Thank you for that. And the issue of basic education being in the group of socioeconomic rights, what I was saying there is that most of the rights in that grouping are subject to progressive realization. But the Constitution made a special, the right to this basic education a special right in a way in that is not a right in according to our Constitution that is subject to progressive realization, subject to availability of resources. It's not one of those. Although it belongs to that group, but it has been specifically mentioned as an unqualified right. It's not us that are saying that it is here and in the Constitution. Yes, but what you may notice when you look at the rights generally, the rights that deal with children, most of them are like that. For instance, if you go under Section 28 in the Rights of the Child, you will see that they don't refer in the same manner that they refer to the rights that deal with generally with the adult population. And I think there must be a reason for that. There is an agency when people are dealing with children. I hope I have answered your question, but that's the best I can do because I'm just taking it straight from the Constitution. And then the other issue that Honorable Mpuchane raised was around the 4As. Now, on the 4As, when we talk about availability, for instance, so it prescribes that what must be in place for you to be able to say the right is available. First, there must be a recognition of the right to basic education. And I have said that in our country, that is there. And it is supported by all the important elements that I mentioned, that we have a constitution that specifically speaks to it. We have a National Department of Basic Education that speaks to that. So that part of it, there is a recognition of the right to education. But it doesn't stop there. There must be early childhood education. All those fall under the availability of education. There must be early childhood education. There is mountains now of evidence of the role that is played by early childhood education in the life of the child and in the performance of the child in the years beyond that stage. But the children who have been exposed to that tend to perform much better than those who have had no early childhood education. And that early childhood education does not have to be in an institution, but it is an arrangement that has to be there to make sure that there is this early childhood education that the child gets. Now, there must be provision of functional education institutions. That is all under available education. What we are saying is that in terms of the 4As, you cannot say education is available if you have institutions that are not functional. If you have institutions that are not functional, then the education is not available. If you don't have sufficient and qualified and available teachers, then education is not available. So you have teachers who are not qualified, you have schools that actually don't have teachers. I went into a school in the Eastern Cape, I think it's called the Seaview. It's supposed to have 15 teachers. And they have only two teachers that are full-time. And on the day that I was there, there were only four teachers, and the other two are not full-time. One is a volunteer, is included in those four, and the other one is, I guess, is an assistant of some sort, but is not a full-time teacher. So out of the 15 teachers that should be in that school, there are only two permanently employed teachers. One volunteer who doesn't get paid, and another who gets a little whatever, I don't know what he gets. So what we are saying is that you are not then going to say that education is available, basically the right to education is available if you have a situation like that. You also are not going to say that education is available if there are no learning and teaching materials. So all these fall under available education. And this is what it's actually trying to address, that you can only then say it's available once all those things are in place, because they are important elements for education to be available. So education is accessible. I have this written down, and I know it's going to take me some time to go through each one of them. Education, and I'll be guided by the chairperson. Education is accessible if a disabled child can be able to get education. If a disabled child or a child who's in the rural areas cannot access education, then it's not accessible.
because there are no means for that child to be able to get education, even though, according to the Constitution, that child has a right to basic education. You know, it just addresses those kinds of things, and that pose barriers to it. Some barriers are physical. They are children who are unable, even though there is a school and there are teachers and everything, but they can't access that school because that school is not user-friendly for a disabled person. So we think all those things need to be addressed if people are to enjoy their rights, if children are to enjoy their rights to basic education. So what we mean by education is adaptable. We mean that education includes everybody, and it takes into account the circumstances of the person, and it also looks at the society that it is educating, and also changes with the developments in that society, and addresses that at each stage. So it needs to adapt to what is happening in the environment in which it is. Education also should be acceptable in the sense that it shouldn't be discriminatory. Everybody should be able to see themselves in the education that that you provide. So, but I, as honorary member, I have information on all these, which I am quite happy, and my colleagues are noting the information that you need, which I'm quite happy to leave with you. I hope that will be acceptable, Chair. And then thank you, Chair. Honorable Mushwana spoke about the role of the parents. In the charter, we acknowledge the importance of early childhood development, and there is a role of the parent within that early childhood development. It's an important role. But as we said, we have aligned the charter with DBE's grade R to 12. That is how we have designed it to be. So, and we have designed it to be child focused. Teachers have said to me, you're not talking about our conditions. But this charter talks about the conditions of the teachers only through the child. For instance, if the teachers say we travel long distances to go to school, that is what they've said to me. I've spoken to the teachers. They say we travel long distances to go to school. So what I am looking at is the fact that the teacher is not going to be able to get to school or to get to school on time. I'm looking at it from the eyes of the child and what impact that has on the child. It's child focused. They said that when it rains, the roads are bad. I sympathize 100% with the teacher, but from the design of this charter, and this is how it's meant to be, what is the impact of that on the child? So that is how we are looking at it, through the eyes of the child and the right of the child to basic education. So, Who monitors the monitors? I think that is how the question was put. Who monitors the Human Rights Commission? The Human Rights Commission, about four times a year, comes to Parliament at each different stage to talk about how it spent its budget, to talk about its performance, to talk and to present its audited reports to Parliament, and to talk about its strategic, strategic framework, and present its strategy document and all that, and then Parliament can say to us,
you had all this money and we don't see what you've done with it, and we have to explain ourselves. And not so long ago, Parliament said, how do you prioritize? We see you will do all these things, but how will you prioritize? And we have to explain to Parliament how it was prioritized. So in that sense, that we account to Parliament about four times a year. Four times a year because at other times we are called on specific areas. Like my being here today to talk on basic education is a specific area. I was in Parliament last week to talk about what is in the plan for this year. What are we going to be doing? And why that and not this? So we do that all the time. And then there was a question from Honorable Lovemore, and I quote, "I don't believe it answers the question." I appreciate that, Honorable Lovemore. But I wasn't too sure what question it doesn't answer. I think you talk about quality education, and I was guessing that the question you were referring to was regarding quality education, whether the charter answers the question regarding quality education. I hope I'm correct, but if I'm not, please correct me before I go ahead.
Yes. No, the question is, what is meant by the right to a basic education, the constitutional right to a basic education? That I do not believe it answers. To say that there must be a rugby field or a netball field, or that 90% of teachers must be qualified, I don't believe that answers the question, what is meant by the constitutional right to a basic education? What you're saying is answering the question. I'm not so sure the report does adequately.
Commissioner, I think the question is very complex. Therefore, I threw in, you know, the hearing of Parliament, the excess, because it's very wide and it's very big, because excess to quality means many things, the way you're trying to explain to us, infrastructure, the teachers, the this, the that. That is what the public and all stakeholders were telling us. So just see how you answer that question. It's a very complex.
Actually, the way that we have answered that question is this 4A's that I've been talking about. Because they don't look at any, there is no one thing that makes up quality education. It's a multitude of things. And one of the things we were saying is that the infrastructure is important, because when children are at school, there must be water, there must be sanitation, there must be they must be in a healthy and acceptable environment. But there must be teachers as well who teach the children. There can't be quality education without teachers who are teaching the children. Those teachers must themselves be qualified to teach what they are supposed to be teaching. And we are saying that those children must also have the materials, which are learning and support and teaching materials for the children. We are saying that the schools, it's a multitude of things. There isn't one thing that is going to answer your question about what is quality. What does the Constitution say? Sorry?
Is quality synonymous with basic? Because that's what she's asking. What is meant, according to your view, by basic education? Every child has a right to basic education. That's synonymous to quality education.
Answer the way they think, because when I speak to basic, then my basic is just basic needs within the school. I think we're not going to stay long on this point.
No. Mm. And I hear what the commission is saying, and I absolutely agree with you. It is absolutely multifaceted, and so it needed a report this size. The fact that you have taken DBE's standards and accepted them and just put them in the report. Okay. And just coupled with the fact that I don't see any additional research into what really should underpin a basic education. What's the international norm? What are the international standards? I don't see that in here. Worries me.
Thank you, Chair Person. Yes. Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, the charter draws on everything. It starts from the international and goes to the regional and goes to the sub-regional and goes to the domestic. It covers all the areas on what the world out there says is quality education. That is what the charter is about. And if you read the beginning of the charter, that is the scoping that we were talking about. It has covered almost all relevant information on basic education. It's covered what the international says. It covers what the regional says. It covers what the sub-regional says. It covers what we as a country say. Now, what we are saying is we're not taking what the department has said. We've aligned with ourselves with the department as far as the department is looking at grades R to 12. But also what we are saying is that what you may not see happening does not mean the department is not committed to. And what the department is committed to is not sub quality or poor quality or anything. For instance, if the department has committed itself to the provisions in the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, where they define education and what it is as a facilitative right, the fact that that is not happening at this point in time does not take away from the fact that we as a country have aligned ourselves with the best. So it does not make, because the department is committed to it, does not take away the value from it. It is good value. If it's not happening, it doesn't take away from the quality of what we have committed ourselves to as a country. Thank you, Chair. The other... Oh, okay. Wasn't this the last question? There was an issue around indicators, I think. Yeah. Okay. It doesn't mean that when a child is the national education budget is 9% of the national GDP. Now, are the rights of the child satisfied? That what the department spends on the child and how it is spent on the child, as I said earlier, all these things contribute to what you are going to get at the end of the day. And let me also just add that these indicators that are here are taken from the current status. So they will change over time, these indicators. They are not static. They are going to change, and this is why we, as an institution, use these indicators to monitor, because they are subject to change, and we evaluate them as we go. So it's not that it's a working document. It's not a one that stays on the shelf. It's a working document. As things change in our country, these indicators have to respond to that.
Honorable Mishu, that's my picture, and then Honorable Kanyako, and then Honorable Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Commissioner, for the informative information. As the Chairperson said, I should be short. My question is based on international or concerning education. I just want to know, because you talk of UK, Ireland, maybe if you can just get the report, how are they doing their education that outside? And then again, Chairperson, on page 13, where you talk of the NGOs, the caregivers, governing bodies, I just want to know how often and when will you meet these NGOs and the caregivers, everybody on page 13, how do you meet them? And lastly, since launching of this commission on base education, what is the status since January up to now? Thank you very much. Status of the commission concerning basic education. For this commission.
Just three words. Because first I want to ask the status, because the status to me.
The state of the state of the commission since of its launching. I don't know how to put it.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you. You came to my rescue. Thank you very much.
If the teachers go on strike at the time when they should make what, you know, is available to the children, available to the children, now, what would be your own once you come to understand that the teachers are actually violating this right? They have something to offer to the kids. The kids are ready to keep working, have to offer, but they go on strike at a long time.
that's great. Thank you. Number one, I must indicate that's a good report, and we welcome that. The questions, well, number one, what needs to be done really is the actual implementation, all right, of the proposals you have raised, in particular on page number 13. I think that's actually what we need to look at, the actualization of those particular points. Now, what I wish to check with you Okay. Okay. Problems with the resolution. Okay, I've missed that one. But like I said, that's actually the implementation, and therefore what we've been able to look at. Now, secondly, I know that in South Africa, they will assist me now, but then a few years ago, about 7 years ago, we had about 350,000 teachers in the country. I don't know if it has gone down, because it keeps on going down nowadays. The proposal to ensure, what is your proposal to ensure that a comprehensive movement is done to ensure the majority of these particular teachers, to ensure that they have the capacity. Very many teachers, well, they are there, they got qualified. Some of them we know went to college for 2 years, for 3 years, etc. And what we have today, Trilabi have moved so much further to an extent that the present teachers, the teachers that have been there, most of them will not be able or cannot be able to interact with that. Have you been able to look into that? And the last point, I've not seen in any way, but you may go on and clarify that particular point, so that you then are able to say, this is what needs to be done, that you propose, this is what the department has got to do, etc. And the last on pardon me, my eyes are becoming, I don't know what's happening. I come from the rural area. Now, go to what page? Page 14. Okay. Now, still on page 16. Is it 13? We must go back to the minds, both you and I. Now, the above 3 points, the first three, okay? 3 points, in particular, show, you know, the momentous challenges we face as a country today. You know, that actually reverse that which you say we must gain, that which we believe has gained a little bit, etc. Okay. Now, what one will want to check with you is whether you have been able to interact with the department. I realize, you initially, before, have indicated that you interacted with the departments, about 8 of them, provinces, that is, did come. I remember you said that, that initially they hadn't, but at last, at least 8 came, etc. But then the question is, has there been the implementation of that which you agreed has got to be looked into? Have you been able to assess? And then if there hasn't been, is there any way in which you propose, okay, that the department really can be able to look into the whole thing? That's the only thing that one will want clarity on. Okay, thank you.
I'm on my way back to the mine because the teacher next to me is saying so.
Yeah, the mine.
May I ask you something? May I ask you something?
Chair, I was saying I'm on my way back to the mines because the teacher next to me says so. My first question relates to the issue of our discussion today, primarily on the rights of the child. My question is, given the context of where we come from as a country, how do we deal with issues like adult education as maybe a human right rather than as a right of the child? Or put differently, let me say, in our situation here, what is the difference between the rights of the child and human rights? If that is an easier option. I don't want to sound academic. My last question is, given all the types of challenges that we encounter as a South African society, what powers has the human rights got to change the situation? Like, in a situation where children are in a deep rural area and there are no schools, what powers can the Human Rights Commission exercise to extricate those kids from that situation? Maybe let me pause there, Chair.
Thanks a lot for that. And thank you for that. I'll ask you to answer, Commissioner, and then I'll give the department the last to wrap up. Thank you. No, we are going to do minutes. Because we're not the oversight body. They're giving us a report, and I think when it comes to this report, there's a lot of reading that you should do, because when a person listens to the questions that has been asked, and certain answers given, there's still a lot to it. Thank you.
Sorry, I'm going to ask order, but the question that I asked about indicators versus rights in that particular column hasn't been answered. It goes to the basic understanding of the report.
No, I think Lovemore, let her answer all the questions, and I think she spoke to indicators and spoke about the change that could take place. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I start with Honourable Mashishi's question about the situation in the UK and in Ireland. We actually don't monitor those countries. We are only interested in the fact that those who are monitoring within those countries decided that they needed something like this in order to for themselves as a monitoring tool. And this is why we were mentioning that those are the other countries besides ourselves that have decided to develop something of this nature in order to be effective in monitoring in their own countries. But we know about a whole lot of problems, especially in the UK, but I don't think that in this context, I should, my information is not full. On how we actually meet with stakeholders, and I think that was another question. When we have these workshops, these hearings, we bring all those people to the hearings. But over and above that, in each of the areas that we work in, we also have multi-level stakeholder advisory committees, and those are in terms of the Human Rights Act. It prescribes that we should have
people outside of ourselves who advise on the work that we are doing based on their expertise, because they are directly involved in those areas. And those, we call them Section 5 committees, they meet regularly during the course of the year. There are people who come from different walks of life, but who have an interest in education. So, and I'm reminded that by your question that I have a basic education one on the 16th, which is day after tomorrow. So, yes. So that is quite regular. People bring stuff and what's happening. And then Honorable Kanyago spoke about deliberate violations, whether those violations are by the teachers, the government, or any body. I think you specifically raised the issue of teachers going on strike. I think without without going far, when teachers go on strike and there is no teaching taking place in schools, the children are deprived. The children are not enjoying the right to basic education. There is no other way of putting it. But what we expect as the Human Rights Commission, is that the person who is a duty bearer, the person, remember that it's not the Human Rights Commission that has to ensure that children enjoy their right to basic education. It is the government that has to do that. We are there to monitor that the children actually do enjoy their rights to basic education, and to report on it, and to call government to find out what steps it's taking when certain things are not happening. But the person who is a duty bearer here is the state. I'm sure there's no other way of putting it, that the rights to basic education is not enjoyed by children when there are no teachers in class for 6 months. But what it means in the manner in which we monitor rights and our counterparts in other parts is that, for instance, when there is no transport for whatever reason to go to school, maybe the transport workers are on strike, the duty bearer has to make sure there are other means that are found for the children to still access their right to basic education. That is how it's supposed to happen. Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Madisha had a question about implementation, because we raise a number of things. We say this must happen, and how is the implementation of that? Now, Honorable Madisha, this, in terms of the charter that we've put in place, this is, as we monitor the charter, we are going to say this and that is not happening. And we are going to be saying to government, which is actually a function we share with parliament, of being able to call government and say, what are you doing about this? And hopefully government will have answers to as to how they're dealing with the issues, because Constitution says we should monitor and report to parliament. That is what Section 1843 says. And I'll be looking forward to see what Parliament does when we come and report to them on this. Section 1843 says annually we must monitor and report to Parliament on these rights. But on the specific question you asked about the provinces that we've been meeting with, we were meeting with these provinces on the specific issue of learning and teaching materials, on whether, because we think it starts there. It starts with the children actually having
learning materials as part of that availability of education we're talking about. So we have listened to 8 out of 9 provinces explaining and detailing the situation in their own provinces, and we have. Sorry, is there, are you communicating something? Okay. I was trying to look at the person who asked the question, but now I will look at you. I will let you know when I get intimidated. Not yet. So we listened to 8 out of 9. And I don't think it's relevant at this point to say which the 9th one was. But we have put together an interim report. It's the only reason that report is interim. I know that I read yesterday that the MEC for Western Cape said he was pleased that we said in his province 100% materials were delivered. But I could speak at length about that because it's not as simple as that. So what we have done is to put together an interim report which was made available. But the reason it's an interim report is that after we had had all the provinces that we listened to, then there were members who came from civil society who said, we operate in that area, and this is not true. So we decided that let's give these people a chance to tell us what is not true and what is true, and then produce what is a final report, which should be available next month, because we have now gone through the information that members of the civil society said. You know, and it's not just civil society, it's also other interest groups who said, what you have heard from this province is totally not true. So we need to be able to test that information and produce a final report. Thank you, Chair. Mr. Honorable Mali. Yes. Thank you, Chair. Okay. On the issue of adult education, Chair, we are purposely not focusing on adult education, and as I explained when I started, maybe there will be another time when we look at adult education, but we're also guided by critical need. And right now the critical need is at the level of the child. So, and we are at the same time not saying that adult basic education is not a right. It's just that at the moment, that is not where our focus is. And what powers do we have if there's no school in a rural area? Yes. As a Human Rights Commission, in fact, those are some of the things we discovered in the Eastern Cape, that there were areas where there were no schools, and the community itself had used different rondavels. I was there myself in some of those rondavels, used different rondavels borrowing from members in the community to use as classrooms. So what we as the Human Rights Commission, in terms of our monitoring of the right to basic education, therefore put together a report and asked the minister to share with us what plans she has to correct that situation.
Chairperson, honorable members, and the honorable commissioner colleagues, Chairperson, thank you for the privilege. We are not supposed to be commenting. We're supposed just to be observing. Thank you for the privilege. The first issue is that we really appreciate the fact that the Basic Education Portfolio Committee saw it fit to to meet with the Human Rights Commission as one of the important Chapter 9 institutions to assist in monitoring and even strengthening the oversight work of the committee. I must indicate that we are working with the commission, and we're working very well with the commission, even in instances where one province could not attend the hearing. We have written to the MEC and the HOD of that specific province. The DG has done so to indicate that we have observed that out of 9, only 8 provinces pitched up, and that reasons must be furnished and a full explanation must be forwarded to the commission. Chairperson, again, just to say that I appreciate the fact that now and again, portfolio committee members will say, what is the international perspective? I think it's very important. As a global player, as a country, so to speak, that we compare and benchmark ourselves with what is happening in the rest of the world. Just to make a small contribution, the definition of UNESCO of quality education is very broad. They have taken also the human rights perspective to define quality education, and we use that definition. It's about care, it's about support, it's encompassing. It's really broad, but human rights perspective in the main. May I also take this opportunity to indicate that, as the Commissioner correctly pointed out, we are signatories to a number of international protocols and instruments. We are also sitting in various fora. For instance, I was sitting even in a task team that was put together by UNESCO to develop a curriculum for the whole world, particularly members of UNESCO, of respecting all persons. It will please this committee to know that UNESCO has taken the curriculum of South Africa as a basis to depart from. We might be having our own challenges in terms of making progress in improving overall performance, quality, numeracy, and so on. But our curriculum is used as a base by UNESCO to develop a curriculum for the whole world for respecting all persons. I was sitting in that committee because of other pressing matters in the country. I couldn't continue my participation. I had to focus on the work that I'm doing. But also to add to what the commissioner said, over and above grade R to grade 12, this committee is aware that we carry out our obligation in terms of 0 to 4 year old. The National Development Plan is very clear. It says education starts from pre-birth. In other words, 0 to 4 year old is a responsibility in part that we are fulfilling. We develop the curriculum. We also train practitioners who are involved in 0 to 4 year old. Safe to say that, Chairperson, the other issues that relate to our work, we engage with you on an ongoing basis. But the last statement that I want to make is purely made on the basis of the fact that you are public representatives. I strongly believe that you've got an immense influence in shaping the direction of this country, in making the contribution that this country could make to the rest of the world. I sometimes get the impression that we are a nation that is angry with itself. We must be very angry when things are going wrong, but we must also appreciate the progress that we are making. I miss that a lot, and I'm not sure. I'm speaking as an official of the department, but I also speak as somebody who loves this country like all of us, that indeed, and I found pleasure in engaging with this commission because they've done so. Even in the snapshot of the article that I read from the Star yesterday, although I strongly feel that some of it might not be the full report of the commission, as the commissioner correctly pointed out, is that they all the time try to balance the way they see things and project real facts from some of what we come across. And the point that I want to make, I see that every time. I see that when I watch TV, I see that when I read from the print media, that we seem to be a nation that is very angry with itself, that does not appreciate the progress that it's making. Thank you very much.
Thanks for that, Mr. Mawele. I just want to conclude, because I think the meeting we had today with our commissioner was a very important one. We received this report early in the year. You know, we appreciate that. But we couldn't call you in because we had the obligation to the budget. Because already, you know, the research we did on it, because there are some research to be done on your report itself. And therefore I say it's very complex, and I didn't want to guide the members at all, because I got a very full research on everything, even on section 4A, what do each one mean, what questions a person can ask there, etc. Because even when it comes to this charter, we will have to engage the department on key legislation. Because there's key legislation that will be affected. Because there a person will speak to ECD, and then also compulsory, the certificate for grade 9, because it's spoken about. And they will have to speak to the compulsory age for the attendance of learners with disabilities. But then, yeah, a person has to commend the department, the minister actually, that said, this year is the year of inclusive education. Then when it comes to Parliament, this whole charter of the children's basic education rights, it has implications for us. And therefore I think Ms. Mawele said how important we were, because I think there was one NGO that showed us the importance of our oversight when it comes to the basic rights of the child. You know, what is your oversight role within Parliament? Because you define the scope and content of the right to basic education as set out in Section 29.1 of the Constitution. And then the Charter sets out the obligations of government to deliver basic education, provide indicators that you are doing, and targets against which government policy and the performance should be measured. And then that will help Parliament to make the department accountable. Because even when it came to that letter that was going up and down to Parliament, there were many things that you were asking for that I realized as I went through, that we as the committee oversight of the department on. And then you spoke so ably to 184.3 of the Constitution that requires that state organs, including government departments, provide the commission with information on the measures that they should have taken in the realization of the rights in the Bill of Rights. And then when you give us this report, like the Honourable Mponshana asked for certain reports, even myself, and that will be useful in our oversight role. Because we'd like to see what you write in those reports, your comments, whether it comes to norms and standards. You know, that whole of 13, water and sanitation, you know, because there's supposed to be an integrated approach of other departments with basic education,
so it will help us. Because I know Human Settlement said they are supposed to provide sanitation for basic education. You know, things like that. So that is going to help us. Then something that you said on the last that comes from the department, we got to have the adversarial nature of litigation makes the court battles that we are having very confrontational, because the litigation is not about solving the problem. It is a process of winning arguments. But the charter has the potential to assist government to be more proactive and address the challenges preventing the possibility of litigation. And I think those things are important, and we have to appreciate, you know, our Human Rights Commission. Even if we don't oversight you, we need to have you here. We need to have all these reports you're speaking about on page 15. And even, you know, the LCSM report, that we could see what is happening. Because I see the minister also gave an LCSM report, was in the newspapers. I read it. And it's also speaking very well of our provinces. But, you know, when it comes to LCSM, I always smile. Because when it comes to the Eastern Cape, you know, also encouraged by the newspapers within the Eastern Cape, like it was the Herald that stated it. That was the first time in the history of the Eastern Cape that LTSM was delivered before, you know, the schools closed. So that also shows the pressure that you as a commission put on the department, and, you know, that consistent and persistent pressure of the minister on all our provinces to do certain things, although, you know, it is a concurrent function. That also worries me, that concurrency. But we'll speak to that. And Commissioner, thanks a lot, because I know you have been phoning a lot. Now we have answers to, because there's a certain reply that I have to still give. And I waited for, because I gave one reply, a second reply, what I'm doing. Now I can reply to that NGO too, once we just complete the bit of work within Parliament, to find out when did that letter come to Parliament that you are speaking about, and we can reply to that too. Thanks a lot, Commissioner. I think I'll give everyone just a healthy break quickly, and then we'll come back. A healthy break. Just to go to the bathroom and have something to eat. Thank you. And those that want to ask the Commissioner questions, you can ask now, because that is the break for two. Thank you.
Nothing wrong, Chair. I wanted to move adoption.
I'm sorry, Chairperson. This is...
No, these are minutes that form part of our report.
Yes, yes, but are you on the 26th to the 27th of March?
Mm.
Is that the minute you're on? Okay.
Yeah.
Then it's headed Budget Review, Department of Basic Education. On the second page it says the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education considered the Strategic Plan, Annual Performance Plan and Budget 2013-2014 from the 27th to the 28th of March.
Yeah.
We didn't. We didn't. There was no single session that was entitled Budget Review or Annual Performance Plan. There were sessions on inclusive education, sessions on teacher professional development, all these various things. No, in Johannesburg, in Pretoria. And I won't argue the acceptance of the minutes. I personally don't ever think that we actually had a session on the annual performance plan and the budget. Because we never actually went through the annual performance plan. Yes, I was.
Yes.
Because there was an opportunity in a particular session to ask those questions. But we never actually had a session on the annual performance plan and the budget. But I did receive it. But I won't argue it any further, Jay.
South African Council for Education for Educators. Should we put that in past tense or in the present form? Says was. No, perhaps it's not the paragraph.
Yeah,
budget review.
Oh,
says is responsible for registration.
Yeah.
And the council further advises the minister.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps it will, yeah.
Five,
I want to move all the pages.
Yeah. Because we decrease the role of the earth in the third of the factory off. Yes. Yes. Yes.